Yeah, you're listening to Life Insights Live with Scout Bartlett. That's right, you are listening to Life Insights Live with Scout like Pathfinder, Bartlett like Pears. This is a very special edition of Life Insights Live. We're going to have a guest with us this morning. Julia Butterfly Hill is our scheduled guest this morning. Julia is going to be in town. She'll be appearing together with Daryl Hannah in an event that's titled You. Yes, you can make a difference. Lead a life of purpose, passion, and power. Turn inspiration into action. This event will actually be a portion of the New Living Expo, the weekend of April 29th to May 1st. And I think will be a tremendous evening. This is on Friday evening of that expo. Julia Butterfly Hill brought international attention to the plight of the world's last remaining ancient forests when she climbed 180 feet into the branches of a 1,000-year-old redwood tree and refused to come down. Her historic protest to the environmental destruction caused by the clear-cutting of Northern California redwoods culminated after 738 days, that's 2 years and several days, with a negotiated agreement that provided the permanent protection of the tree that she protected, Luna, and a 3-acre buffer zone around it. Julia Butterfly Hill is an activist, a writer, and a poet. She's the author of the national bestseller, The Legacy of Luna, and co-author of One Makes the Difference. The Legacy of Luna, I haven't read One Makes a Difference yet. The Legacy of Luna is a phenomenal book, and I'm going to take a small privilege here. This is the very beginning of chapter one. Fierce winds ripped huge branches off the 1,000-year-old redwood, sending them crashing to the ground 200 feet below. The upper platform where I lived rested in branches 180 feet in the air, 20 feet below the very top of the tree, and was completely exposed to the storm. There was no ridge to shelter it, no trees to protect it. There was nothing. As the tree branches whipped around, they shredded the tarp that served as my shelter. Sleet and hail sliced through the tattered pieces of what used to be my roof and walls. And every new gust flipped the platform up in the air, threatening to hurl me over the edge. I was scared, she says. I take that back. I was terrified. As a child, I experienced a tornado. That time I was scared. But that was a walk in the park on a Sunday afternoon compared to this. The awesome power of Mother Nature had reduced me to a groveling half-wit fighting fear with a paper fork. That's just the beginning. I know you're going to want to get The Legacy of Luna. That's the writing of Julia Butterfly Hill. So everybody, this is Julia. Julia, good morning. This is everybody.
Good morning, everybody.
I'm so glad to have you with us this morning. And a friend of mine said to be sure and tell you hi. Apparently, that you and she danced together at some festival somewhere. So hi from everybody that's ever danced with you, Julia.
Wonderful. Dancing can be such great liberation. So.
Absolutely. I have to say, you keep me on the edge as I read The Legacy of Luna. It's a brilliant piece. But let's back up a little bit. You found that you found in a moment of prayer that there was a draw and a sense of purpose, and you were willing to let go and follow that. So it's interesting. I do another program on the air, and one of the questions that I always ask people on that show is, what do you mean when you use the word prayer? So I'll bring that over to this show. Julia, what do you mean when you use the word prayer?
For me, prayer is really about putting a question or intention out into the universe. I was raised with a traveling preacher for a father, so prayer was very specific to a very specific God, a very specific idea of God. But as I grew up, I began to feel that although Christianity has some incredible tenets and stories and helpful ways of living and being in that tradition, those positive things are also encased in some pretty constrictive and negative things. So I found over time that I kept the good and let go of the rest of the tradition that really didn't feel like it serves me anymore. And while I was in Luna, my understanding of prayer really came to a whole new level. I was sitting there listening to you reading about the storm, and I was laughing because I just... that was such a profound profound experience. And when we go through that much intensity, everything we think we are, everything we think the world is, begins to completely dissolve and transform. And as a result, even my idea of prayer began to transform, because I realized what I'm really doing is that there is all this world that I do know, and then there's all this world that I don't know, and then there's something even beyond that, because my ego does not pretend to be big enough to comprehend it all. So it's really to this great mystery of life that I place forth a question or an intention, and then I look and listen to hear the response. And one of the things after going through the treatise that I tell people is I now know and believe in the power of prayer, but the biggest power in prayer is being willing to hear the answers.
The biggest power is being willing to hear the answers. Isn't that the truth? That's the truth on so many levels. I don't know why they erase that when people get elected to live in Washington, D.C., but they do somewhere.
I think there's some kind of a little thing that they walk through, kind of like a security line that cleanses all that kind of possibility out. Sends a barcode, scan code down them and cleanses them of that kind of accountability and cleanses them of their spirit, cleanses them of their soul, and they come out the other side in Automon. Who knows what's happening, but you see people go from, you know, being humans in their lives to becoming something other than human in this process. It's kind of sad how much I think that the political system that we have in this country really strips the soul out of humanity.
Yeah, God bless them. If I can, and I'll admit I'm sort of doing this against the rules, but I'm using little segments for a critical review, and I think that's quote-unquote legal. But there's a great place in Julia's book where she says, tree sitting is a last resort. When you see somebody in a tree trying to protect it, you know that every level of our society has failed. The consumers have failed. The companies have failed. The governments have failed. Friends of the forest have gone to the courts. The activists have tried to make the consumers aware, but with no results. Corporations have neglected their responsibility as landowners, and the government has refused to enforce its laws. Everything has failed, so people go into the trees. And there really is that whole element to it, that you didn't climb up into Luna. Well, first of all, you didn't climb up into Luna expecting to live there.
No, I definitely did not. I'm actually most famous for what was my third tree sit, but I went up twice before the final one for about a week each. And then when I went up the third and final time, I thought I was going to be there 3 weeks to a month, and then it turned into 738 days.
Yeah, it was a close guess.
Yeah. You know, a month, 2 years and 8 days, it's all, you know, it's all relative.
But there's
this interesting thing about that it's really good that I didn't see what was coming. You know, I couldn't have planned that action, and it's very good that I didn't see what was coming, because my mind would have told me that I was not capable of doing that. Then my mind would have told me that I was not capable of going through what I went through, experiencing what I went through, and coming out the other side. My mind would have said, oh no, and I would have given up before I ever started.
You know, that's a really key point. I've been meditating on the Marianne Williamson quote that's so attributed to Nelson Mandela about why not step out and recognize our greatness. And yet, some of the interviews and other things I've read, and I haven't read One Makes a Difference yet, don't get that, but some of the interviews and other things I've read, that there was no way in the world you were prepared to be a lightning rod for, well, actually, from every direction, both for being a spokesman for ecology and a spokesman for trees, but also at the same time, the other people that wanted to be spokesmen thought it wasn't fair that you were.
Which I totally understand now. In the beginning, it was really painful for me that people I thought would be my allies started turning on me. And I was so naive. Well, very well-meaning, but so naive when I first climbed Luna.
Which apparently is what it took.
Yes, it did. And I'm actually really glad that I approached that action from that naive space, because I really came to it in many ways like a child. And I feel that actually that's how we sometimes need to remember how to reapproach life, that children approach life with more of a question than an answer. You know, how many kids do we know that run around saying, why, what, how,
yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
You know, like they are always questioning. And then we grow up and we think we know it all and we quit asking questions.
Yeah.
Children approach life with a little bit more wonder and awe and like, wow, look at that bug, wow. And we grow up and we look at that bug and we go, ew, bug, smash. You know, so there's something beautiful about that naivete, and I'm so glad that I had it, because it had me approach the whole thing, from the actual physicality of it to the spirituality of it to the dealing with activists and the legal world and the media. in some ways it was very painful because I made some mistakes, just as children do. But I had a freshness of viewing it that allowed me to just allow this experience to create itself versus try and say, this is exactly what it is and this is how I'm doing it. And it, part of the gift in it was at first that I was very hurt when I thought these people were my friends and all of a sudden I was the enemy and I was being attacked and I didn't get it. And then as I sat with it, part of what I realized is because we live in cultures that are so profoundly disconnected, we all people come from traditional roots, but many of us are so far away from that. And in traditional roots, people sit in circle and share with one another all the time, sitting around the fire, sitting around the soup pot. There's so many places and ways that people share with one another. And now we live in these societies where people are in cars. They walk out of their house, down some concrete, get in the car, drive the car, get out of the car, walk through some concrete, get in an elevator, go to a cubicle, spend their day in it, and come back down and do it all over again. And the way of communicating is by watching media. And so when the media showed up and I had this opportunity to share my thoughts, feelings, opinions, and beliefs, and people started getting mad at me, part of what I realized is it's because these people are just as passionate as I am, and all of us who care deeply about what we care about being shared, that we want what we care about to be heard. We want what we care about to be known and noticed and to make a difference. And who was I, this young upstart, to have this opportunity that some of these people who had been activists for years and years and years and years had not had? And it gave me a space of empathy that I didn't have at first. Because at first I was just very reactionary. I was like, who do they think they are? I haven't done anything wrong. I haven't touched the ground for forever. I'm doing everything I can. Like, who do they think they are? And then when I dropped below my ego, what I found was that space of empathy that blessed them. They care just as much as I do, and they're hungry to have their voices and their opinions and concerns heard, too. And then I started doing my best to find ways to at least reach out to people and say, what kind of things do you want shared? And part of the challenge, though, was there were some things that people wanted me to be saying or doing that weren't authentic for me. And I had to be willing to draw a line and say, I love you, I care about your views, but I cannot be your mouthpiece. I cannot be your robot. I can only be authentic to me. But if you tell me something that resonates for me, I will absolutely integrate it into what I do, into how I speak up here.
So what a shock it had to be for this wandering kid from Arkansas, well, Arkansas most recently at that point, to suddenly find that you were a media power and that you were in a position to be carrying these ideas and carrying these ideas into so many living rooms.
It was very intense for me because I didn't have to even grow up with media. I didn't have a television growing up. I haven't had a television for most of my life. I very rarely watch movies. I don't read newspapers very often. I mean, I was really oblivious to the world of media. And in the beginning, I made a load of mistakes because I didn't understand how ruthless the media is. And I would spend like 2 hours with an interviewer and give them my soul. And then they would ask me the basics of how I survive in a tree, and I would answer that question because that's what everybody wants to know. How do you go to the bathroom? How do you get your exercise? Do you do anything for entertainment? How do you get your food? You know, like the really basic, people go to the basic first. And once they understand the basic, then they might be willing to consider an elevated question or conversation. But they want the basics first. And then, so I would answer the interviewer's questions, all of them, and then the quote that they would give me in the article was my describing how I live in a tree.
Yes.
That would be my quote. And I was devastated. I'm like, that's not my quote. My quote is 97% of the ancient redwoods are gone and we're still cutting them down. My quote is what we do to the earth, we do to ourselves. My quote is anything we care about is worth giving our lives to. Those are my quotes. My quotes are how I live and survive in a tree. And so I then had to learn how to work with the media, and I realized, you know, the media is using me. Yes. And let's be real, I want to use the media. I'm not going to pretend to be more enlightened. I actually am trying to use the media, too. So when I got real with it, I understood how they use me. Then I was able to say, okay, how can I make this a mutually using agreement so that when I wake up in the morning, I don't feel used? And I learned how to answer their questions in my own way that would at least work out those things where they just really undermined me and as a result undermined the movement.
Right, right. So you and Daryl Hannah are going to be here in town presenting You. Yes, You Can Make a Difference. There's a quote that says, recognizing that every single choice changes our world, we stop asking, can I, just one person, make a difference, and start asking, what kind of difference do I want to make with my life? And it's interesting because the first piece of you deciding what kind of difference you, was you willing to spend your month in a tree that actually took 2 years and 8 days. But your second part is what you're describing right there, of actually learning how to work with this massive machine that basically wanted to talk about where did your poo go?
Yes. It can, and if we look at that for all of us in our lives, we all come from different walks of life. We all have different stories. What we're doing in our lives is different. But there's some themes that are common and resonate no matter who we are and where we are and what we're doing with our life. And this concept of you make the difference, I actually don't even use the word can. It's no, you do. I tend to even steer clear of words like activist or activism, because we think that's for a select few people like me, the people who do direct action. And yet the reality is all of us are directly impacting our world every single day. We just don't realize it because we've been so separated from the consequences of our choices, even though our choices have a very real impact in the world. Every time we make a choice, it makes a difference. No choice happens in a vacuum. So it's actually not only philosophically impossible, it's actually scientifically impossible to have no impact, to make no difference.
Right.
It's actually scientifically impossible. So this idea, can I make a difference, is a lie. It is a very destructive lie. The reality is, yes, I am making a difference. And then we begin to ask the question, what kind of a difference do I want to make with my life? And it is an exploration. We live in a society that very much conditions us to think, behave, believe, speak in a very particular way. And when we're willing to let that story begin to dissolve and recreate a new story, it's a new conversation. We don't always have it figured out. But we have to put one foot in front of the other and start moving in the direction of, what is it that I care about, and how do I have my life live in a way that honors what I care about? And if something shows up that's very big, like large media or sitting in a tree for 2 years, how do I give my all to this and allow it to cause me to grow and to be bigger than I would have first have thought capable of myself or my life?
And stepping through each step of the terror and returning back to exactly what you described as prayer, connecting into that sense of a grand and connected universe, and then being willing to listen.
Definitely. And also being willing to love. I mean, it's such a simple thing, and it's so difficult. We talk about love as super new ageism, or we talk about love as like relationships with a person, or sometimes we talk about the love of our pets or animals, but there's this kind of love that breaks your heart into a million pieces. And as it does, it causes transformation. Now, the caterpillar has to liquefy in order to become a butterfly. And to love in the world today means we have to allow ourselves to be liquefied. It's so violent right now. It's so, it's so horrendous what we're doing to the earth and to one another and to ourselves.
Yes.
And so to give ourselves fully to love is to offer our lives to love and allow that love to call us forward, allow that love to call us through. And from my experience, that's been the hardest thing I've ever done. There are days where I'm just like, I don't want to love. I don't like people. They're mean. They don't play well with each other. I'm going away. You know, I just get frumpy and frustrated and whiny and complaining and raging. I'm good at rage. And when I work through that, because that's my commitment is to work through it, when I work through it, I realize that all of those feelings are really just cover up for the fact that I'm a really sensitive being who loves deeply. And so my apathy, my cynicism, my rage, my judgment, my whininess, all of that is just trying to block myself from the pain that I feel. And then I have to be present to the pain. And then when I go underneath it, what I'm present to is that I love.
Yes.
And to give our lives to love seems like a pretty worthy thing to give our life to.
Yeah, I I spend my periods where I look at the fact that humans are very bizarre critters, and they're the only ones that poop where they eat. And yet, the dolphins won't have me. So I have to be one of these, and I agree with you 100% that the concept of unconditional love is not, ooh, everything's okay with me. The concept of unconditional love is I have to be willing to feel the pain, and underneath that, the fear, and underneath that, the reality of my being.
Mm. And it's a beautiful place to be, even when it's painful. I can't believe the life that I've had in my 37 years here. It's more than I could have imagined in multiple lifetimes. But that commitment to having love call me through and forward has called me into a space that my mind would limit, where my mind would hold me back, where my mind would create division and walls and separation, that love continues to dissolve that disease of disconnect, that myth of separation. And the more I am present to my connection to the cosmos, the more I can grow beyond my limitations that my mind says is possible and not possible.
That myth of separation, what a beautiful phrase for it. So folks that haven't followed and haven't paid attention may only think of Daryl Hannah as an actress in movies and so forth. And yet, I'm very familiar with her interviews, including places where she's talked about she was one of the first people I really heard talking about running a car on French fry grease, with a really cheerful expression about it. How has it come about that you and Daryl are doing this presentation that's coming up here this week? Or not this week, that's coming up here on Friday the 29th, excuse me.
There's a few steps that were involved. I started hearing about Daryl many years ago because of her lifestyle commitment, and she was sharing in the Hollywood world about her lifestyle commitment to living green, that she was very authentic in saying, you know, a lot of people in the industry talk about the importance of green, but they're not necessarily living it. And during the time she started it, it's true. It's now kind of trendy in Hollywood to live green, but Daryl was actually living it long before it became trendy, and she was talking about it, which to me I was very impressed by, because it takes some courage to be outside the norm when you are anywhere in the society, but particularly in Hollywood, that it can impact your career if you get seen in a particular light. And Daryl was just living her life. Her website is actually Daryl Loves Life, and like, it was so clear to me that she was just living what she loved, and she was just like, even when I read the interviews as well of her sharing about her green lifestyle, it's like, I love this. I just feel like it makes sense. Why wouldn't we care for the earth that has everything we need and all it needs from us is to take care of it? Like, it seems simple. Like, why don't we do that? So just really breaking it down in such a simple and beautiful way, that caring for the earth is caring for ourselves, and that to live in harmony with the earth makes sense. And makes common sense. So I was reading about her lifestyle choices and was very impressed and very grateful for who she was in the world. And then I had an opportunity to meet her at an event in Los Angeles. And it was a, you know, wild event, and so there's lots of people around. And I went up to her and I said, "Hey, Daryl, I don't want to interrupt your evening, but I would love to just tell you that I'm so grateful for who you are in this world, and that you're using the spotlight on you to highlight right choices, conscious, loving choices in our daily lives and in the world around us. And I'm just so grateful." And she's like, no, I'm so grateful to meet you." And then, boom, you know, the event pulled us away from each other again. So that was our first meeting. And then we had mutual friends. So we got a little bit more connected over time. And then I started working with the South Central Farmers in South Central Los Angeles. They had the largest urban farm in the country in South Central Los Angeles.
Wow.
It was 14 acres feeding over 350 families for nearly 15 years.
Wow.
And the city and county of Los Angeles decided to take the land back and evict the farm, sell the land to a developer, and the farmers were given an eviction notice.
So clearly those city planners got run through that Washington, D.C. barcode reader.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Excuse me while I remove your sense of humanity and plug in your political value system.
Yes, exactly. And it was really sad to see that this is what we need more of, not less of. We need to see more farms in our cities, not less. Community gardens are important, but this was actually a farm, which is even a whole other level. And this was in South Central, which was such a beautiful reality as well as a beautiful symbol, because the self-centrals of our country and our world are the places we throw away in our mind, that we destroy them off in our thoughts. We don't allow them to be vital just from our very thoughts. And here is a community of folks who, from the moment they were given that empty, deserted, trashed lot in the city, never took a dime from the city after that, never took a donation dime, and with their own elbow grease and what they could create from the community, they built that farm from the ground up, 100% their own. So they get evicted. They get the eviction notice, and I've been working with them for a while. I called my friend John Quigley, who is an amazing activist, who's actually in court today for being charged with various charges for trying to stop another area nearby here from cutting down some trees in Arcadia, California.
Thank you, John.
I think he's in court right now.
Thank you, John.
Yes, exactly. Thank you, John. So I called my friend John because he's been doing tree sits and aerial art and all kinds of activism for most of his life. And I said, John, you're in L.A. area. I need some tree sits set on the walnut trees on the South Central Farm. I'll be there soon. Can you do that? And he said, absolutely, I'm on it. And then I called Daryl and I said, girl, there's this thing going on in your backyard that I think you will love, that I think you'll want to be a part of. I told her. She showed up at the farm. I came down to the farm. Daryl came to the farm thinking she was just going to document it. She's an incredible documentarian. She actually has video blogs on her website if folks want to see them, because they're so powerful. So she thought she was just going to come down and document with a film, and then she had her own version of her tree because she didn't leave. And she had to have somebody come and move her car because all the streets around it, the car would have been impounded. She had to have people bring some stuff for her to survive, and she spent the nearly next month on that farm and didn't leave until she was cut out of a lockdown with John Quigley in one of the trees and taken to county, to the jail.
Wow.
And she stayed with the community and with the farm, as did I. I actually ended up having to leave a few days before they were finally evicted, and but she was there to the very end. And that's when we became really close, because we lived on that farm in the middle of South Central for nearly a month, and we never left it. And going through that intensity of negotiating with sheriffs, building relationships with the community, playing with the kids that were there in the farm, just an incredible experience. We became so tight. And after that, of course, then all of a sudden she had done her first direct action, and the whole world rose up and was paying attention. And I told her I wanted her to connect with my manager, who's one of my best friends and who also has a long history of activism and now is in kind of the management, more mainstream world. And so he's a perfect bridge. And I told her, you need to work with him because you need some help now. I knew from my experience of like falling into the deep end and not knowing how to swim.
They're going to want to know what you do with your poop.
So they got connected. And then through that, this opportunity arose where I told my manager and I told her, I said, I want us to do in conversation style with for events, because we have both similar passions and views, and we've come at it from different ways. Yet there's a richness that comes through in a conversation, and I love conversation style at events. I've been doing conversation style for a while on my own, because I wanted to try and dispel the myth that there's like the expert professional on stage and the passive people in the audience. I really wanted to create an environment where everyone in the room, even if not everyone in the room is sharing, everyone in the room feels like they're in a dialogue, because we've done enough talking at one another. It's time we started communicating. And to communicate means shares the same root word. It's commune. To commune with community. It's all about affinity. And so often we talk, but we don't commune in our conversation. So I had this great opportunity now to share communion in communication at events. And it's so beautiful to see what comes through the whole group through that kind of a format.
Yeah, community. It's weird that humanity is supposed to come from the same root as human. And sometimes it doesn't. It's interesting to note that Daryl had to take huge risks because she was already famous, to then speak out about things that are right choices. You had to take huge risk because you became famous for speaking out about things that are right choices. Why should speaking out about right choices be such a risk, Julia?
It's not that they should be, obviously. It's just that they are, because we have a culture that's based on the disease of disconnect. It's something I call separation syndrome. Yeah. When you rip a plant's roots out of its connection to life, it begins to die. We ripped our roots out of connection out from the earth and one another, and we're beginning to die. Look around this massive tsunamis and earthquakes and all these environmental kickbacks that are, and ecological kickbacks that are happening right now is the result of our separation syndrome. The amount of war as some supposed way towards peace is proof of our separation syndrome. The fact that alfalfa and corn and soy are taking over the world and being genetically modified. I mean, the prisons that are growing every day instead of health centers and hospitals and rehabilitation centers. I mean, any issue we look at, what we're seeing is a symptom of the disease of disconnect, yes, of this separation syndrome. And so to speak truth in this time is revolutionary. And it means to take great risk, but it's actually more of a great risk to speak truth while you're following it with your actions. Because people are very good at talking. People are very good at pointing fingers and saying, you should be doing this. You should be changing this behavior. But they're not paying attention that any time we point at something in the world, there's three fingers pointing back at us. So what that means to me is if we have the awareness to see that something's wrong, we're three times more responsible to try and help make it right. And it doesn't mean just pointing fingers and talking at it. It means getting into gear in our personal lives and asking ourselves, in what ways am I living in alignment and in accordance with my beliefs and with my vision of the world? And in what ways am I not? And anywhere that I'm not, without judgment, because there's no such thing as a perfect choice, but without judgment, with love, asking myself, how can I put my life more in integrity with my words that I speak and with my vision for the world? Because that's the only way to have a solid foundation to then demand others change. Because we so often want everybody else to change, but we don't want to have to shift anything of our own lives. And I feel that that's part of what became powerful for both Daryl and I, is that not only were we speaking a collective truth, because we hear it all the time from people who say, thank you for saying what I feel. So we hear that resonance all the time. But I feel that part of why we're even asked to come do an event is not just because we talk about it, but because to the best of our humanity, which means we both have a lot of faults, but to the best of our humanity, we've committed to living our beliefs, not just talking about them.
Yeah. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Julia Butterfly Hill. And Julia, I would keep you on the phone and talk to you forever, but I know this is the completion of how much time that we've allowed. You are a tremendous resource that I do not wish to abuse. Thank you so much for doing the interview this morning, and I'll make sure that I come by and at least wave at you at your event if I can't make it through the crowd to say hello. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for helping spread the word, and I look forward to seeing as many folks as possible at the New Living Expo. I'm excited that we actually have this conversation about what living in a truly new way means and then start putting that conversation into action. So thank you.
Cool. I'm Scout. I'll be the guy that you'll meet that has the purple beard and the bald head.
Beautiful.
So this is Scout Bartlett. We are listening to a special edition of Life Insights Live. We'll be back in a moment, but we've got to tell you a few other things first. Thanks so much, Julia.
Get on your spiritual path at the Spiritual Healing Center. Meditate, feel great, don't hesitate. Join Carol Eccles every Tuesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Spiritual Healing Center,